Kate Garufi, who's joining us from EPA's Office of Superfund Remediation and Technology Innovation to provide an introduction to the talks and the series. So Kate, if you're on the line, please feel free to get started.
All right. Thank you, Jean. And welcome everyone to this presentation. As Jean mentioned before, the webinar being held today is titled Construction Manager Perspective, Lessons Learned Implementing the Superfund Job Training Initiative, or SuperJTI. We're really excited to have our presenter here today under this seminar series. The Superfund JTI program that Tommy's going to talk about later is an EPA program, and a lot of times we hear EPA's perspective on this program. I'm really excited to hear sort of the end user construction manager perspective on how the program worked for a Superfund remediation project. But before we get into Tommy's introduction as well as his presentation, I wanted to briefly mention what the Designing Construction Issues at Hazardous Waste Sites, or DCHWS, series is. It is a EPA and Society of American Military Engineer, or SAMMEE, co-sponsored series of events, activities, and training or collaboration. This is our fifth year in our co-sponsorship between EPA, the Denver, and the Philly SAMMEE Post. The objective of our seminar series and our symposiums are to facilitate open and frank information exchange among professionals regarding issues with designing construction at hazardous waste sites, provide a forum for presentations describing current practices and approaches, management techniques, and field experiences. And really, you know, the main goal for our collaboration is to enhance communication networks and promote continuing discussion and learning among designing construction professionals, both within the government and in the private sector, as well as academia. We have a number of events that we co-sponsor. Two of them are in-person symposium events. One is the East Symposium, which will be delivered in April 2020, and the West Symposium, which is delivered in the fall in Denver. We also have a seminar series, including webinars, this being one of them, and in-person training. So for the seminar series, this is our third seminar event out of 10 that are planned for 2020. The first webinars are focused on presentations that were delivered at past symposiums. The idea here is to get more in-depth to the 20-minute presentations we do at our symposiums and also reach a broader audience and continue the dialogue and learning. In addition to the webinars, we have an in-person training scheduled for the spring of 2020. Dates will be communicated in future webinars. This will be on construction management. I encourage you to hang on at the end of the webinar when Tommy is completed and we're wrapping things up. I'm going to give more details on the next webinar that are scheduled in the series as well as the symposiums, when they are, where they are, how to register, et cetera. So with that, I'd like to get into the presentation and introduce Tommy Jordan from Black & Veatch. He's a project manager in their Atlanta, Georgia office. He has over 20 years of experience field laboratory and management in geotechnical, geophysical, and environmental remediation projects. That's a mouthful. He received a bachelor's degree in geology from Georgia Southwestern University and is a licensed professional geologist in the states of Tennessee and Georgia. In addition, he is also a military veteran and has served overseas in the U.S. Army Reserves as an airborne platoon leader. So with that, Tommy, we'll get your presentation up and you'll get started. Thank you.
Thanks, Kate. Can everybody hear me?
We can.
Awesome. Great. Hi, everybody. I was the project manager for the Fairfax Street Wood Treaters Superfund site in Jacksonville, Florida, and that's where we implemented the Superfund job training program. And what I plan on doing, this Superfund, the job training initiative program was a success. It was highlighted in the administrator's Superfund Task Force final report. And one of the things that I wanted to bring out on this is that goal number 4, which was promoting redevelopment and community revitalization in the task force report, that's where this program fell under. It was also highlighted, and it's highlighted on the EPA Superfund homepage. And the reason I bring that up is because it's a pretty cool program. And it has a lot of weight and carries a lot of momentum, and it's really important to the EPA for it to be a success. So what I'm going to talk about today is I'm going to give a brief overview of the JTI program, and I'm going to talk about our implementation of it at our job site. And then I'm going to talk about some lessons learned and challenges with that implementation from our perspective. And I was going to touch on some, we're going into the RAF contract, and some considerations with implementing this and some things that I see, I'd like to give some recommendations or considerations under the RAF contract and how we see that contract being a little different than the RAT contract. And then I'll do some acknowledgments and Q&A. And also give some contacts for the JTI program if you guys wanted some additional information. And I am by no means an expert on the JTI program. What I'm going to do is just share our experience that we had with implementing it from our perspective. So the JTI program, it's an EPA headquarters funded program. So it's not coming out of our budget directly. And it's a job readiness program. So job readiness means that they are going to, the EPA is going to pay to recruit, pre-screen, and train candidates on the basic qualifications needed to be hired by the construction contractor who's doing the work on the Superfund site. The graduates of this program are allowed to be interviewed by the contractor or a constructor or a subcontractor, whoever's going to be doing the work. The candidates that are targeted are unemployed citizens or underemployed citizens that are affected by the Superfund site. So they're typically going to be local to that area and people that may have grown up in that area and that were kind of affected by it in different ways, positive or negative. The program provides basic remediation and hazardous waste cleanup training. The good thing about it is an opportunity for these candidates, for these citizens to be placed in positions that are set aside by the contractor to work on the site. And it provides significant benefits to the project. It builds trust with the community. It also helps with transparency to the community because there will be local residents that are actually working on the site. And so that's huge transparency because the citizens and the community around there can talk directly to that person and know exactly what's going on that site. And that's a great build and benefit of this program, especially if you have a Superfund site where community relations is really high on the priority list. There's contractor benefits because you're able to get local people. Your per diem, you have a local person. If that's an area where, as a contractor, you're looking to expand and do more work, you have local people, and you're able to get someone and train them up directly to meet your particular standards and work under your principles. And you have an opportunity also under this program to be able to really change people's lives. And I'll touch on that as well. So the basic training certificates that the program will give are OSHA 40-hour training, HAZWOPER, CPR, and first aid. And they also are going to train these candidates in job readiness skills. That means they're going to educate and train the candidates on basic good work practices, being timely, being a responsible worker, and making sure that they understand the standards that come with working on a construction site, and that they need to be timely. And they also can provide some specialty training, such as 10-hour construction, or asbestos and lead awareness or abatement training. It's going to be, if you have particular needs on your site, that would be something that you would want to, if the JTI program was a part of your project and implementation, you would want to have conversations early on to say, okay, well, we may need this particular training or this for this particular site. And the JTI program may be able to provide that training for the candidates. So before I go into the JTI implementation process, I'd like to stop and just ask if anyone has any questions generally about the overview of the program. I'm going to walk through the implementation, and there's several phases of the project, and there's a lot of details in the implementation, and I wanted everyone to kind of have a nice overview of the purpose of the program before we get into some of the weeds of that. So if anyone has any questions at this time, we can entertain them.
Sure. So I'll just remind everybody that you can send in your questions in that Q&A window on the lower right. We did have someone wanting to know, you had mentioned the phrase RAF earlier, and they were looking for just clarification on what that is and how it might be impacting the JTI.
Yeah, the last slide that I'm going to touch on, that the RAF is the new contract that's superseding the RAC. The RAC Superfund contract. It's expiring, and the EPA is implementing a new contract, and it's called RAF. Kate, I'm sorry, the acronym RAF.
It's Remedial Acquisition Framework.
Yes.
Yeah.
And under that, the RES, the Remedial Service. Yes, Kate, please. You know it much better than I do.
I'll help you out a little bit.
Thanks.
No problem. Under the RAC contract that EPA used to do, in some instances, Black & Veatch would do the design, and then they would be our construction manager and subcontract the construction on the agency's behalf. So EPA would not be competing the construction contract. Under the RAF contract, Black & Veatch would do the design, and then EPA would compete it among a pool of pre-placed contractors. So how the Super JTI program is going to be changed a little bit, which Tommy will get into, is when Black & Veatch was our construction manager, we could incorporate JTI into the process earlier with them as they were preparing for and executing the procurement of the construction contractor on our behalf. Now the agency is going to have to do some of that upfront work to ensure that their contracts allow for the JTI program to be used. So, Tommy, would that be a good summary for the differences?
Yeah, that was.
Okay. Tommy, I just want to make sure we've still got you on the mic there. It seems like your audio dropped off just a bit.
I am back.
There we go. All right. And we did have one other question, and you might get into this later, but one of the attendees wanted to know how early in advance of the remediation work does an entity need to make a request for this type of job training?
I will go through that in the implementation. I'll kind of touch on that job, the timing and scheduling of all the different phases and how long the training lasts and that. That part. So I will be getting to that.
Okay.
And if I don't answer it adequately, please have them ask again at the end.
All right, excellent. I think maybe we'll just carry on, and then again, as additional questions pop up, please, for the audience members, feel free to type them into that Q&A window, and we will pause again for questions in a few moments. So feel free to carry on, Tommy.
Okay, great. All right. Sorry, just a second. I was trying to get the clock to show on my screen. So I won't be too long, go over too much. Oh, okay. All right, so the implementation process. All right, project initiation. So we found out about the project being as part of the scope during the initial scoping meeting with Region 4. And they brought up their points and priorities, saying, "Hey, we want to implement this, and it's important." And so it got on our radar at that time. This was our first implementation of this program, so we had questions, and we needed to know, hey, what was, you know, tell us what this program is, what it's about, and so that was a blessing in disguise, because it caused us to really ask a lot of questions. So way up front, at the very beginning of the project, we were alerted, and that was really important. So the relationship with this project was, we were the contractor, and we were going to sub out all of our work. So that was the relationship, not sub out. We were going to sub quite a bit of the actual field, the iron work on site, to a subcontractor. So we were the contractor, we were going to be managing it, and we were going to have a constructor or a subcontractor who would be doing the hiring of these graduates and employing them to work on the site. So one of the first things that's needed is the positions that are available and expected. And because we had not selected our subcontractor yet, we had not procured that, it was just on our docket that we needed to know that. That was something that was really important at that time. We had meetings. We had a couple meetings with the RPM and the headquarters about the program, and we got from them what was the most important things for them. And the number one thing was, we need to know the number of positions that would be made available. We needed to know, the headquarters needed to know, the type of training that was going to be available or needed for the site. They let us know that they were going to do 40 hours CPR and first aid. The other items that are needed to know way up front are hiring requirements and also the schedule. And that schedule is related not just to the RA implementation, but the schedule of the JTI program. Okay, so we discussed with the EPA RPM, and we talked with the EPA headquarters implementing the JTI program. We talked about the RA schedule, and we had a projected date of when we needed to be in the field. So we worked backwards on that to establish some milestones for these key items. In order for the JTI program, they needed to know that schedule that they had to work under. And the main thing was when they needed to know when they needed to do the actual training of the candidates. So the EPA headquarters, they had to schedule enough time before the candidates were needed on site and before the site work was going to be done. They had to have kind of figure out a schedule because they had to go out and send out informational flyers. They had to recruit candidates. They had to talk with local people, local leaders, to try to gather up potential candidates. And then once the candidates are taken, then they had to fit in the training, and then they had to fit in the time frame of the hiring process. And all of this had to be done before they were needed, before we started the remediation in the field. So the JTI schedule really also drove our schedule in developing our bid documents and select our subcontractor, because we weren't going to have the initial information about the positions that were available and the training requirements until we found our subcontractor, we talked with them, and found out what they were going to need. So our bid had to be developed, sent out. We had to procure and select and procure the subcontractor in that schedule so that it was enough time for the JTI headquarters to be able to go out and solicit the information, find the candidates, and get all the training done. So the understanding the JTI schedule and having that fit with your RA schedule is critical. In the very early stages, so when you're doing your RA schedule, you need to have a good understanding of the time frame to implement. And the EPA headquarters was fantastic in working with us. We had some calls. We had several calls with headquarters, two calls with headquarters right after the scoping meeting and before we sent out our RFP to our subcontractors. And that was extremely helpful. And they were very helpful in helping us understand the schedule that they were going to need. Typically, 3 to 6 months, the process for them, for the JTI headquarters to get the candidates, get the training, and have them ready to start in the field or ready for job interviews is a 3 to 6 month process. So it needs to be that's why needing to know on the front end real early that JTI is part of your project is really important. So those first initial calls with the EPA headquarters and the Region 4 RPM were really critical in discussing what information was needed and when. So when we developed our RFP for our subcontractor, we included in the RFP that Superfund JTI participation was part of the remediation scope. We requested in the RFP the number of positions that the bidder would make available to the JTI program. We requested the position role, for example, a driver, a laborer, an equipment operator. And also, internally, we developed a weight and bid selection criteria that was in sync with the priorities of the EPA. Because the success of the JTI program for this particular project was so important, that became a selection criteria for us that we weighted pretty heavy. It was the highest weighted criteria when everything was combined together. It represented 20 to 25% of the weight of the selection. So once we sent that out, the RFP out, and we got our bids, we selected and awarded the contractor. We immediately confirmed with the awarded subcontractor the number of positions that he had in his proposal and the roles. We requested specific hiring requirements that they would need for their for them to take on the graduates. We communicated that information to EPA headquarters staff. And then we continued after the selection, and while we're getting ready to go to the field, we continued communication with the Superfund job training coordinator. This was someone that JTI headquarters will hire to do the training, do the flyers, help get find the people, do pre-screening of the candidates. And so that was a local coordinator down in Jacksonville. And that they worked directly for the headquarters. But there was this great communication between the coordinator, EPA headquarters, the EPA Region 4 RPM, and us. And so there was clarification and communications all along the process as they're trying to select candidates. And then there is a participation in the evaluation and selection of the Superfund JTI applicants for the program. And I'm going to get into that in just here, this next slide. So there were, for our particular site, there were 22 candidates that were found. And they were, we'll call them applicants for the program. And there is, the EPA goes and recruits these potential applicants. They do preliminary screening just to make sure that they are they have the potential to be good workers and good candidates for the program. And then they will screen down to a certain number, and that number for us was 22 candidates. We're ready to go to the final phase of the screening process, which was called the tryouts. And the tryouts are a one-day session that includes some physical fitness demonstration. They can touch their nose and they can move, and they're not handicapped physically. The and some leadership and some team building exercises, and the tryouts are done in front of an evaluation board. The evaluation board can include representatives of the EPA Superfund Joint staff, training staff, EPA RPM can be involved. Local and community partners are typically involved, community leaders that were part of that recruiting process and helping get the word out that the program was going to be implemented at the Superfund site. And contractor and or constructor or subcontractors. Those are all people that they can be part of this evaluation board to evaluate the candidates to select which ones would participate in the actual training. This would be getting their 40-hour OSHA training, CPR, job readiness skills. And the applicants are primarily evaluated on their effort and their attitude and the commitment to wanting to better their lives and be part of the cleanup and commitment to go through the training, show up on time, and that kind of thing. So that's that evaluation criteria, and that's important. We'll get into that in the lessons learned. The next part of the implementation is the candidates now that are selected, they go through the training program. Training program lasts 2 to 3 weeks, and that's relatively short in the whole time frame of implementation. That's relatively short. Most of that time frame is way up front, finding and recruiting potential applicants, coordinating the requirements, coordinating with the schedule, and so the 2 to 3 weeks, they'll go through the training program. Training program, they'll get their 40-hour OSHA, CPR, first aid. For us, we ask that they also be have 10-hour OSHA, because that would be required under the for the construction. So that was also added as part of their training. And then there is the graduation and pre-employment interviews and processing. And that's when we're now to the point where we're getting ready to execute execution phase, where we're going to get them on the job site. Out of the 22 applicants that went to the tryouts, we had 13 that were selected and were part of the training. So we had So 13 graduated. Then after graduation, there was pre-employment interviews with our subcontractor, and then the hiring process that they would go through HR and the drug screening and whatever hiring processes for our subcontractor were required. Implementation, monitoring, and closeout. So we've got our hired candidates. They're on the job site and they're working. So now this part of the phase of implementation is the monitoring the status of these potential workers. Also the monitoring the hiring process. Sometimes for us, it wasn't, you know, a one-day thing. It lasted a while, and I'll talk about that. It was actually about 4 to 5 weeks hiring process, and I'll touch on that with our lessons learned, why it wasn't really quick. The monitoring, then once they're on site and on working, you'll still need to monitor them, because they're new and there's things that do come up. So they'll need, you'll want to stay in touch with, talk with the subcontractor, stay in touch with how they're doing, where they're at, are they doing okay? And the EPA also does a follow-up with these candidates as well. So the EPA headquarters does a great job with this program, managing it and staying close to the ground with it and working with the constructor or the contractor with the implementation process. And then once the project is finished, we have closeout documentation, such as for us, we provided a memorandum. Once the graduates that were interviewed and those that were hired, we provided a memorandum to the EPA saying, hey, you know, this many graduates of the JTI program were hired and worked on the site, and here's verification of the employment, and then also there in the summary of it in the RA report. So that's just an overview of the implementation that we followed. And I will talk about, I'll go back through each of those phases and talk about the lessons learned and some of the challenges that we came across. The most important thing was, in implementing this, was discussing with the EPA, to introduce this in the very beginning, as early as possible, saying, hey, this is our intent to implement the Superfund job training initiative. Because it affects the budget of the contractor, because the amount of effort, involvement in the additional conversations and the planning, being a participant in the graduation, being a participant in the tryouts, and also the extra, discussions with, if you have a subcontractor like we did, the additional monitoring and discussions with it. It does add more management and time and effort. So it does affect the budget in that way, that more level of effort is going to be required and attention needs to be put into it during the RA. And schedule is really affected by it. Because the amount of time to recruit and screen and train and hire, that whole process, 3 to 6 months, that has to coordinate and sync with your RA goals when you start the project, when you want to be able to get started and mobilize to the field. So that's why it's really important for EPA to introduce it, say it's an intent early on. It's also important for the contractor to understand, like I said, the logistics, the typical duration of the phases. That was discussions that we had initially with the EPA when we before we even sent out the bid, because we are still trying to figure out our schedule. And they're really great about, they've got experience with this, so they can say, hey, yeah, if you want to be in the field, say, in May, or May 4th, let's work backwards. And then they can say, no, that's not a good enough window for us at this particular time. The bid needs to go out at this time, by this date. We need to know the number of positions that, from the selected contractor by this date. And so those discussions, if you're going to be implementing it, close discussions with the EPA headquarters, JTI program, and your EPA RPM, that's really critical to have a good understanding of the logistics as it pertains to your project. Also, because it's going to be a unique project, it's important to get an understanding of the EPA expectations. For us, a lesson learned was we didn't fully understand the importance of the project, of the success of the JTI program as it related to this project. We were contractors and we're thinking, okay, we got to go and remediate this project. Yeah. And the JTI was an extra objective, on the side. EPA did a great job. The RPM did a great job and said, hey, this is really important to us. But we really didn't sink in for us. So it's really important, I would suggest, and our lessons learned was that if the JTI program is going to be implemented on an RA, as a contractor, it is really important that it's successful. And it's important to understand what success means. What is the success metric? For us, we came to find out a little later on that the success metric was a minimum of 8 people being hired, 8 graduates being hired and working on the site. So if you'll remember, our relationship was we sent out a bid and we would ask the subcontractor, hey, how many positions are you going to make available for the project? And when we got the bids back from the subcontractors, they ranged from 8 to 20. And at that time, when we were developing the RFP, I realized, and we realized, that we needed to have a success metric. We needed to know which subcontractors were going to meet the minimum positions that EPA would consider a success. And for us, that number was 8. So we knew that was the success metric. And that's a discussion that I would recommend having early on, as early as possible. The number 8 came about was because that was the minimum number that was evaluated to be feasibly acceptable for the cost to EPA to do the training and to be considered a success. Yeah. The priority levels. So, as I said, if the JPCI program is going to be part of your project or the RA, just go ahead and assume it's extremely important that it's a success. And then frequent communication was critical in this planning. This really was the most important part, way up front, having the discussions with the EPA headquarters and the RPM. We had a very involved EPA RPM that facilitated that communication, and that really was one of the biggest reasons for the success, that every week or every couple of weeks we would be having a discussion. How are we doing? Where are we at? How's the screening going? How's the coordinator, having any questions, any concerns? Is the community involved? Is the subcontractor knowing the schedule, when the hiring's going to be done? So that is very, very important. Make sure, our lesson learned was make sure there's plenty of time up front for conference calls, emails, communication, as the process from the planning is an initiation is happening. So in the bid document, we put the wording, I put our wording on here as a lessons learned, that wasn't the best wording. So in the bid, we said, in support of EPA Superfund Job Training Initiative, the contractor will agree to participate in the Job Training Initiative program as part of its labor force. Significant participation in the Superfund JTI program is strongly encouraged by the EPA. That language did not convey the priority of the program to our subcontractor. When I interviewed them for lessons learned, they said one of the biggest things for them was when they came on board and won the project, they did not understand how critical it was that they would hire the people, that they would follow through, that it wasn't communicated well. So the wording that we use, this significant participation, is strongly encouraged. when I do the program, when I do another RA and send a bid out, I will use stronger language than that. I will probably have a better idea of a success metric and convey how important it is that it is considered this, you know, the remediation is not just cleaning up we're going to reach the cleanup levels, yeah. But also as a definition in the end of whether this is a successful RA is if they were successfully implemented and met the success metrics for the Superfund job training program as well.
Tommy, I just wanted to do a real quick time check. It's about 2:49.
Okay, and we are stopping in, just a few minutes. All right, so with the bid documents, I talked about the weight, making sure that your weight and method of scoring is consistent with the goals and expectations of the EPA. My lessons learned was once you develop those weights, go ahead and get your EPA RPM involved and say, hey, is this the way we're going to score the bid, is this consistent with your priorities as well? Consider the size of the remediation. I mentioned one bid came back and said, hey, we're going to make available 20 positions. Well, we figured there's only going to be 30 people on the site. So if this bidder was going to have 20 of them as brand new people, citizens that are newly trained, 20 out of the 30, that throws quality issues into it, risk, safety. That was a big concern. So when you're also considering your success metric and your project and the number of positions, consider the size of your labor pool that's going to be used. Definitely do a follow-up call with the EPA headquarters and RPM on job descriptions and positions. A good example for us was the successful bidder said they're going to do 4 CDL drivers and 4 laborers. Well, out of the 13 candidates, there were only 2 CDL drivers. That was part of what the JTA program, they were trying to find CDL drivers, but they only found 2. Those 2 got hired. So does that mean that the subcontractor only needed to hire 6 people now? Because they had 4 positions for CDLs, but only 2 candidates were even available. And the end game was, no, 8 people have to be hired. So even though there were just 4 CDL positions and 4 labor positions, the end game is the number, there had to be 8 people hired. So definitely when you get those positions and roles back from the subcontractor, make sure that you discuss those and look at those and follow up with the candidates when you're doing the screening and the job tryouts, that you're going to fill those positions. If not, discuss early on, okay, we're only going to have 2 CDL drivers. That means we're going to need 6 laborers. Or try to be more creative with developing some viable positions that could be used based on the candidates. With the applicants, the criteria was based on effort, attitude, and commitment, not experience. So the subcontractor, that we need to know that, hey, these guys may have no experience. So not hiring them because they don't have experience is not going to be a valid reason for not hiring them. If they have the training and they are part of this program and they have the effort and attitude, good attitude and the basic job readiness, then they are essentially qualified. And unless we found something glaring, that they're considered viable candidates to be hired. I will say quickly that the graduation was a big deal. I was floored. I went to it. There were federal senator representatives there. There were state executives and federal politicians there, a lot of leaders. It was very emotional. It was a very, very big deal. The lesson learned is definitely be part of that. Have someone go there, be part of it, speak, and see how you're influencing these people's lives. That was a huge lesson learned. I didn't realize how important this really was until the graduation. It really came home to me. Some of the hiring requirements may not be met by the graduates. So one of the things when we were hiring, the graduates, some of them said, "Hey, I only can work on weekends." Whoa. Well, where did that come from? They went through the program. This was a big surprise. They were screened. They were supposed to commit to doing this, but when they were going to be hired with the subcontractor, they said, "Oh, I only can work after 5 and on the weekends." Some of them had felonies and couldn't be hired. Some of the graduates just flat out said, "We just want the certificates and we don't want to work on the site." We have weekly discussions and update during this process because these things started coming up and we had to continue interviewing more. We eventually interviewed all 13. We were able to get 9 people hired on the project and work on the job. But we had to go through all 13 because things came up like that that were just kind of out of the blue. Once a graduate is hired and begins working on the site, they need to be monitored closely. As I said, a minimum of 8 graduates were expected to be on site. And so what we had to get creative because we had to go through all 13 and interview all 13. We re-interviewed all 13. Lesson learned was take notes while during the interview process because you may find out that you have to eventually start going through all of them or some didn't work out that you wanted to hire because of a felony or it turns out that they didn't want to work. So we went back and we looked at our notes, we looked at some of their qualifications, and we were creative. We found some opportunities such as being a public relations person for the to work with the community. We were doing residential cleanups. That was a position that we were able to make viable and for the project and be able to get a graduate in that slot, and that worked out real well. Just to close out, memorandum verification of hiring was all we did with the closeout. And we did a lessons learned for follow-up. So real quick, just a few points on RAF considerations. Just make sure EPA, make sure we want EPA to put it up front in the statement of work, that it is an intent that the JTI program or a possibility that the JTI program would be part of this remediation. It needs to be known as early as possible because it's a 3 to 6 month process from the planning to actually getting them on the site. EPA should consider conducting background checks. For example, several of our candidates had felonies. That EPA went and spent that money to train them, and the headquarters does ask them if they've had felonies, but for us, our experience was that they turned out, I think one had 3 felonies in the last, 2 years, and just could not be hired. So I would suggest that it's worth the money that the EPA include drug testing and the background check to just make sure that the money spent on the training that these candidates and graduates really are viable candidates. The EPA selection of the contractor for the task order should consider experience with implementing the program as a significant weight to selection. If EPA, when you're selected for selection of an RA contractor, if the JTA program is intended, it should be part of the statement of work, but also it should be carried a significant weight, because it turned out that if it was not for such great involvement with our RPM, the implementation would not have been as successful as it was, because there are a lot of lessons learned. There were things we had to work around. We had to be creative, and so I would say for the EPA to select a contractor, if they have that JTI experience of implementing it, that's definitely a plus. The success metric, this is the biggest thing I think for the EPA, is knowing what's the minimum number of graduates on the site, or a percent of a labor force that the EPA would consider a success metric. It's really important to define that as early as possible in the planning initiation and planning phase. That really caused us to have issues on the back end. And also, if you're having a metric of 8 and you only have 13 graduates, that's cutting it real close. And that's difficult to balance the number of graduates. If you have 40 graduates and you're only going to pick 8 of them, that's not really cool either. So there is a lot of balancing going on with that, a lot of considerations to be made from EPA standpoint. But for EPA to define the success metric is really important up front, if that's possible. Can the requirement or minimum success metric for implementing the program at the site be determined after award? Because it's a discussion that needs to be considered, talked with the contractor. As I discussed, if you have a labor force of 20 and the success metric is 15 graduates, well, that's going to create issues with quality, implementing, safety, those. So it may be that success metric cannot be defined until after the award, and having discussions with with your contractor and finding out where that balance is and defining that success metric. So that's all. I need to stop, but that was the last slide. These are acknowledgments to Lee Lattimore, EPA RPM Region 4. She was awesome with this. Melissa Friedman, she was the JTI Superfund manager up there. I think Devin, I think I saw him on our list. Yeah, he's out there in the audience. I think he took over from Melissa. If more information, you can just Google EPA SGI program, and there's the link. And these are the contacts. Devin Martin is regions 1 through 5. These are the SGI program managers. They are super helpful. They are very informed and can answer your questions.
Okay. Well, I think we have time for a few questions here. And Tommy, I think a lot of the questions have come in focusing on retention of employees. So people were curious. Yeah. Of the people who were trained, how many of them were still employed or still working in that type of a cleanup field, whether it be a few months to a few years later? Do you have any data on that?
Yeah, so several of these, the graduates from this, I think 3, have gone on to other sites with our contractor. The contractor we had was Intact, and they had experience with that program as well, and they had several people from a previous JTI graduates that they still had employed. So for this project, I think 3 moved on to stay with the company and moved on to more sites. And out of the eight that started. But I do know that talking with Intact that this program, they really like the program. And because it does provide them with local people and good people that they can train up. So retention is going to vary. Any other question?
Yeah, we did have a few other questions about cost or time that this might have added to remediation work. So they wanted to know, was there an increase or an overall percentage shift in labor costs by using this program?
No. From our perspective, it was not, because they were already positions that were part of the bid. They were already positions that were already committed to the job cleanup. So it wasn't a significant increase. Again, that's because the positions were made available from the very beginning, from the very bid process. They were incorporated as a viable slot. From our standpoint, it was not a significant cost increase, but just be aware that you need to bump up your participation, your meetings with the EPA, your coordination with your clients, attending the graduation, attending the tryouts. Those are highly recommended. So not a significant cost, but just be aware that you got a slight increase in your communications and meetings.
Okay, and that actually was one of the other questions someone had asked about earlier. In terms of communication, it seemed like that there was a lot of it. So they were wondering, what
yes.
media were you using? Did you just have a team website? Were you emailing, phone calls, in-person meetings?
We had our weekly call with the EPA where that was a topic on the agenda, where we would update on the progress. We had a couple dedicated calls in the beginning with EPA headquarters, getting the ball rolling, making sure we're all on the same page. We have milestones, dates that we're all working together with. And then emails. As once we sent out the bid and got the award, the local JTI contractor coordinator. She may have a question here or there, and it would be an email, maybe one or two emails a week. So not significant, but it does take some time and consideration, and it is very much incorporated into the implementation and planning process, if that makes sense.
It does. And I think we'll just take one last question here. Can you use this job training initiative for remedial action or the construction phase of work?
The remedial action, wow. We used it for the remedial action. We had on-site cleanup, dig and haul. It was a wood treater site, but we also had residential. So some of the JTI graduates actually worked in a capacity, an administrative capacity and a public relations capacity. So that theoretically could be used before the actual construction began. And it also theoretically could be used after construction to help with community. These were some residential cleanups, making sure that that the final walkthroughs and things like that were completed, that those residences were happy. So I can see the candidates being in positions not only just for construction, but also in things that might be outside of pure construction. That would be a great question for Devin or Viola, from their experience, to see how some of these graduates have been utilized. So again, that's part of that very first discussions with EPA, saying, hey, what do we see we could be using as positions or these candidates in, particularly with this site?
Okay. I think we might go ahead and stop with the question period here, but I did want to have Kate Garufi come back on the line and just have any closing thoughts or reminders that she wanted to have regarding the series. And again, Kate, if you're there, feel free to come off of mute quickly.
All right, I am here. Just waiting for my slides to load. Thanks, Tommy. That was really informative. So what I wanted to mention to folks as we're wrapping up is we have a number of webinars scheduled in the future. I have scheduled the slot through March. The next three presentations are up on your screen. There are a variety of design and construction topics, very varied, much like this one was from the last one. The registration is up for the January delivery on environmental sequence stratigraphy and the delivery in February on design, construction, and optimization of a large-scale combined remedy. Shortly, the registration for the March event on cost risk will be available. In addition to the webinars, as I mentioned in the beginning, the Design and Construction East Symposium held in Philadelphia is scheduled for April 1st through April 3rd. We have about 400 slots available for attendees. The calls for abstracts to moderators are open right now. They actually close on the 14th, which is Saturday, in which we will be selecting the abstracts and setting the agenda, which would be available before the holidays. In addition, registration is open. Again, although there's 400 spots, it sells out every year. So if you're interested in attending the Design and Construction Symposium, I encourage you to click that link and register. And with that, Jean, I'll hand it back to you for some final housekeeping.
All right. Thank you so much. Tommy, I did want to echo the thanks from a number of the participants who have really enjoyed the perspective and information that you shared. We've already gotten some positive comments in the Q&A window. And I want to thank all of you who took time out of your busy schedules to join us for today's live webinar, as well as stay a few moments extra for an extended Q&A period. If you enjoyed today's seminar, I encourage you to visit us at the Cleanup Information Network, or CLUIN.org, and be sure to sign up for our free monthly newsletter, Tech Direct, which goes out on the first of each month and will highlight free webinars and other training resources like today's session. If you're looking for a copy of today's webinar or links over to the Superfund Job Training Initiative website, you'll find that on the related resources page. There's also contact information for our presenters and organizers, as well as links to download a copy of the presentation materials. For those of you who are looking for a participation certificate, I would encourage you to fill out our brief online feedback form to let us know what you thought of today's delivery. Again, you'll find all of this stuff linked on the seminar homepage, so the link that was included in your confirmation and reminder emails. If you visit that homepage now or later on, you'll see links or tabs along the middle that will allow you to get to this information. Specifically, though, I'll point you to that seminar feedback form. If you check the box to fill out that seminar feedback form, as long as you check the box at the very bottom of the form certifying you were here for the whole session, as soon as you submit your feedback, you'll then immediately have access to a participation certificate that you can either save or print out for your own records. If you happen to join together in a group, each person in the room can follow that link to the form and fill it out on their own. Even if you didn't register individually, you can still share feedback and get your own participation certificate. So if you did set up a conference room for others to join you, please be sure to copy the link to the feedback form and share that with those who joined you in the room. And so again, as noted earlier today, our session was recorded. You'll automatically receive an email from me as soon as the archive is available for on-demand playback. So with that, I will again echo my thanks to all of you who took time out of your schedules to join us for today's session, as well as our speakers and organizers who helped us put on today's session. We hope that you found this to be a valuable expenditure of your time, and you'll join us for our next webinar. This will be the formal conclusion for today's live broadcast.